Hey there, I'm Sandy Scarlatta, and welcome to the Happiness Solve podcast. Twice a week, we explore the journey to finding true happiness by sharing inspiring stories, practical tips, and insightful conversations with some of today's leading experts. But we don't just scratch the surface. We dive deep into the real grit of what it takes to live a genuinely happy life. Whether you're looking to improve your well-being, enhance your relationships, or simply add more joy to your life, you're in the right place. So grab your favorite beverage, get comfortable, and let's dive into today's episode. Because happiness is a choice, and the choice is yours.
Eric and Callie, such a great pleasure to have you here today. How's it going for you guys?
It's going great. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm so excited to have you guys on because I love talking about money and money management. And Callie, is that what I'm saying, Callie, right?
Kaylee.
Yeah. Kaylee. See, you know, I have a niece named Callie, so that's
really
even though you just, yeah, even though you just told me before we hit play, like, see, and I told you, like, yeah, this is Kaylee. I like that. So Kaylee and Eric are husband and wife, and they're founder of Beyond Your Hammock, a fee-only independent wealth management firm based out of Boston. Wow, there's a lot to unpack there. First, let's hear your story about how you got started with this and why Beyond Your Hammock. That's an interesting name for a wealth management firm.
And that's probably the reason we chose it, just to be individualized and separate from the everyday wealth manager and the perception that you have, because everybody has their different perception of what wealth management is, what financial advisors do. So having a name that is well outside of the norm is going to have people ask questions first versus assume first, which is a key. But ultimately, Beyond Your Hammock is just living above and beyond societal norms and doing what it is that you feel is best for you and using your money the way that you want to use it to live fully throughout your life.
Love it. Love it. What's it like, Kaylee? What's it like working with your husband?
90% of the time it's great. And then the other 10% of the time, it's a challenge. It's tough. If you'd asked me that when we started working together in 2018, I would say like the other way around. 90% of it's really hard and 10% of it's nice. So we've iterated on how we manage, you know, business, life, family over the years. And I think that's reflective of our financial planning process too, is it's an iterative engagement process that's constantly changing based on the new information that you get, based on trying something and saying that didn't work. And that's all it is. It's no judgment on it. It's just what works and what doesn't. And let's tweak it and try again to get to that place that works. So overall, it's really great, especially because I think we have not just complementary skill sets, but kind of I'm looking in 180 degree this way and Eric's got the other side. So we have each other's backs. And I think we create a really good team that way because we have different strengths and different skills and we can kind of cover each other's weaknesses and get that full picture together.
Mm, amazing. That is so amazing. So we're going to talk money in a second, folks, but since I've got a husband and wife partnership here, let's go down that rabbit hole just slightly. How do you guys separate, you know, because my husband and I both work from home, but I'm on a different floor and he's down there. We don't work together, but we're in the same house together. And yes, this started during COVID. It was very difficult at first being around each other 24/7. And now it's been 5 years that we've been home together, right? And it took a few years. It was not easy. It was not easy. But again, we don't work together. We're just in the same, under the same roof together 24/7. But how do you separate the marriage from the business, or is it fully integrated?
Well, I think it's fully integrated to answer it very directly. But the integration doesn't mean that it's a constant flow of both topics, business and personal. I think we've learned over years how to separate the two, when to bring up one topic versus another, and certainly when to test the waters to make sure that it's okay to bring up a work conversation in personal time or vice versa. But the good news is that we are so passionate about what we do and we love personal finance so much that we find ourselves talking personal finance on dates. So it's okay to do that because we love it.
I think part of it too is, like Eric said, just because it's integrated doesn't mean it's nonstop. And it also doesn't mean there's no boundaries. And that's been a bit of a learning process. But I think a specific example of where we're different and where we've had to learn each other's rhythms is Eric's really great in the morning. He is on it. He can talk like really intense conversations in the morning. But by the night, like that's, nope, we're not talking business. We are not talking heavy topics. Like after our daughter goes to bed, like after 8 p.m., even after 5 p.m., I feel like for you, because your day is so full versus I start thinking and that's when my brain starts going. So I've had to learn to capture that information and find a better time to talk about it so we can have a productive conversation. And the same way, the other way around, Eric knows, like when I do not spring out of bed, I like slither out of bed. And so he knows like at 7 a.m., that's not the time to like, hey, help me figure out this problem. So that's a one specific example of just learning each other's kind of boundaries in that way and then respecting each other's rhythms so that we can productively, you know, work together without stepping on each other's toes in that way.
That's absolutely brilliant. I mean, I love the fact that you guys are like the perfect example of not just how to be a husband and wife in business, but how to be a husband and wife as a team, because it just sounds like what I'm hearing is that you guys have really dialed in on your communication and understanding each other, and therefore you're able to complement each other. So, you know, kudos.
Oh,
kudos, because you're young.
I think it can work against us too, because we're both, what works really well is we're both very intense people and we have a lot of energy for the things that we care about. And I think sometimes that goes the other way around, in that if conflict does come up, it's like two rams locking horns and no one's going to let go because we both have the energy to really go at it. So that's been a constant work in process of how do we learn to release and find a better way. But you're right. It is all about the communication. I don't think you're ever done working on that. You're just always trying to find better ways to do it.
Yeah. Any comments, Eric?
No, it's just, I mean, it is a work in progress. There's no other way to do it. And you can't shy away from certain things because you think they're hot buttons and then pretend they're not there and sweep them under the rug. I think that's one thing that may have been really hard in the beginning and even over time is just to approach things like this is gonna hurt a little bit, but I'm gonna bring it up anyway because we have to work through this. There's a book by Ryan Holiday called The Obstacle Is the Way, which means you're walking through the obstacle versus around it. And I think that's how we live our lives. And that means that the challenges come up more often, but we also resolve things quicker.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I always say, like, for me, my whole journey was trying to go over, around, under. And until I realized, you know, this was like 35 years ago, but I realized I had to go through it. And that's just anything in life, right? Any issue that you have that comes up, and it's hard. It's really hard sometimes, but you can't go, because if you go around it, over it, under it, it's just going to come back and hit you in the face. And when it comes back, it usually hits you even harder. Right. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about some money. So how would you guys define the connection between money and happiness? And do you think that financial security can lead to lasting happiness?
Whew, that's a loaded question. And I think the answer is nuanced, like anything else, where I do think that money can facilitate happiness. But I also think that money brings out the things that are already inside of you. And the more money you have, the more it exacerbates the things that are there. So good things get better, bad things get worse. And I think that's a really big deal because you have to understand how you are as a person, what makes you tick, and what are the things that you really need to work on yourself as you start to build your wealth so that you don't become this terrible person in the end. And you can actually use your money as a true tool to do what it is that you want to do in your life, whether that is personally speaking to live well and big and travel and whatever, or it's give away the money and help other people or a little bit of both. But there's a rhythm that comes from learning how to use it effectively.
I love that you said it can bring out the worst in people. And what came to my mind was, you know, you see it all the time, especially with young athletes, you know, who are given these big checks and they end up, you know, broke, homeless, bankrupt, all of that. So what can people do? You know, how do they really learn that connection there? And because, you know, we're all told, you know, not we're all told, but my generation, money's the root of all evil. You know, like that's what you heard, right? And it's all BS. You know, money's just a tool. It's an energy. It's just like everything else. You know, what do you think that is? You know, why is it that it brings the worst out in people? I guess that's what I'm trying to get at.
Well, I think to answer that and to like what you can you do, I think the first step is just the self-awareness. Like try to start thinking about what are my money scripts? Like what is the story that I'm telling myself about money? Because Sandy, like you, that's how I grew up, of like my parents kind of had a judgmental attitude around people who had money. Like there was something bad around that they would find whatever it was. It was never the same bad thing, but it was always something bad. So I kind of had that in my head of like, ooh, having money is bad, but not having enough money also bad. So it was just like having that subconscious belief, really. And to change that story, you have to start by understanding what is the story I'm telling myself right now. So just trying to be aware of like what feelings just kind of come up, you know, when you think about money. Is it, do you have an avoidance of it? Does it make you super excited? Like there's no wrong answer. It's just kind of getting an understanding of, all right, what is it that I'm telling myself, and what is or may not be true about that, and kind of start questioning. And I think what Eric was saying about it can bring out the worst in people is that if you're like, it's like any tool, you can use it for leverage to build something really great, or you can really do a lot of damage with it. And I think money, especially as you get more of it without having done this kind of reflection on what's going on in my head around money, it can be a place to hide. So you can see a lot of people have just emotional, like the root of it is emotional. If you're overspending, it's an emotional thing, not a math problem, right? Or if you're avoiding something in your money, probably again, something that's emotional. And it's going to be different for everybody. And again, whatever you have in your head right now, it's not wrong. It's there for some reason through experience, how you were raised, whatever it is. So I think it's just more important to look at, where am I starting today? And you can do that from an emotional standpoint. And you can also do that from a very tangible standpoint of what does my money look like today? That's also the first step in figuring out what do I need to do tomorrow? You have to understand just what is it right now with no judgment around it. Just it is what it is. And you can accept what is so that you can start moving forward to start changing that in a positive direction.
Yeah, exactly. Because it is a tool. And I was just looking in your bio, like part of what you do is to help, you know, professionals learn how to use their money as that tool and live well today, but while strategically planning for tomorrow, because that's what people don't think about. And they think about it too late. Oh, you know, I'll start saving tomorrow. And I know, you know, I used to be in recruiting, and when I would be talking to a candidate and they would be getting the job, I would, you know, I always, especially when they were really young out of college, get that 401k, you know, start that now. Don't think you can wait till tomorrow, like start that now. So what are some of the biggest mistakes that people make when it comes to strategically planning for their future? Because there's, oh my gosh, it's such a, there's so much information out there. What do you do? What do you do here? What do you do there? You know?
Well, I think not planning is probably the biggest one, because everybody's busy and there's always something to do. There's always a fire to put out. Whether that is an urgent and important fire or it's just urgent and not all that important, you end up going at those things because they're easy to check off the list. Like, you know, we have to deal with work, right? I'm busy with work right now. I can't focus on my personal finances. Like that's a big one that we hear. We'll call you next year because it's a really challenging time for me right now at work.
Or the best one is, I really got to focus on buying a house, so I can't do any financial planning. It's like the biggest financial decision you'll ever make. It's like, that's what you want to do first and then plan later. I think that's another big mistake.
Yeah, for sure. So, all right. So let's see. How do people, like, what's the, let's just say somebody comes into money. I wrote down lottery or inheritance, right? Because that's usually the quickest way that people come into a lot of money. And yet, I don't know the exact percentage, but it's very, very high percentage of lottery winners end up broke within 1 year. And I'm sure the same is true for people that inherit money. So when somebody gets that chunk of money, they come to you, what do we do now?
Sit on it for 6 months and don't do anything. It's really like for that kind of money, right? The sudden money that you get that you're not used to is significant. There's a significant impact financially, but also emotionally. And if you haven't had to work through all of those things that we've talked about previously, about how you think about money, and then you just get a dump truck dropped on you, it's very easy to start to splurge and do things that you have been holding back on doing because you didn't have the money to do. And that allows you to make decisions that may not be the best, like, hey, let's just stop working, right? Well, maybe work was giving you some sense of who you are and the reason to get out of bed in the morning and just to use your brain. And now you're just not doing anything and you're just spending money to buy cars and maybe even a plane or who knows what. I don't know how much money you're talking about here, but it gets really out of control really fast. Instead of just saying, you know what, I'm going to put it aside, I'm just going to live my life and start to think about what comes up for me, knowing that I have this money, and then you can start to make slower decisions after that point.
Yeah, for sure. So what about the flip side of that? Because debt is a huge problem as well. I mean, I don't know how people make it. You know, my son just graduated college and I know what he's making and he's living paycheck to paycheck. But what he's making is a decent amount. Now, there's probably a lot of other, you know, too much DoorDash, other issues right there with the spending. But it's very hard to make ends meet. And people end up with a lot of debt. And then that becomes overwhelming in and of itself. So how do people get out of that? What's the best advice? Because it's like, well, yeah, obviously you got to pay all this debt. You got to pay your debt down. But do you do that first and then start saving? Or can you get to a place where you're doing it both at the same time? So, but really it's like trying to, you know, the overwhelm is what really gets most people.
Yeah. I think the answer is, and I'm afraid it's not a good one, but it depends. It depends on,
of course,
your income, how much debt you had, where that debt came from. Cause I think having student loan debt, if you are a doctor and you can get public loan service forgiveness and you are about to make this very large income that you have a plan to pay off the debt, that's different than even if you're making a high income and you have $100,000 in credit card debt. Like, those are two very different problems, even though maybe you're both making high income. So I think the source of the debt matters. And I think it also matters whether, if you can identify, is this a math problem? Like, I make a certain amount of money, living expenses are what they are, I'm doing the best that I can, I am making good choices, it's more of a systemic issue. That is, like, I don't have an answer for that, unfortunately. I wish I did. I mean, that is definitely something that keeps me up at night of, like you said, I don't know how people make it sometimes. It's really, really hard. And it's just because someone has debt, it's not necessarily through their own series of bad decisions. So I think in that case, it's probably looking for help that I don't know if we can provide, but I think there are programs and education that might be able to help. But if it's not just the math problem of, like, I'm making the right decisions and there's just not enough to go around, if it's more of a, no, on paper, I have the money to afford my life, and yet I still have this high interest debt, this car payment that's excessive, then I think you start looking at the decisions that you're making. And specifically, it can help with looking at what your core values are and seeing, do my actions align with that? Do the financial goals I've set align with those values? And if things aren't aligning there, then that's where it might be time to take a hard look at how you're choosing to use your money and making some changes there. And if you have a higher income, depending on the interest rate on the debt, you should still be prioritizing your savings. Saving and investing, because time in the market, having those long-term investments, have the time to grow is really important. So I wouldn't just set that aside as you're dealing with your debt. You'll have to learn how to balance the two of them. And that might mean making some tough lifestyle changes in the short term to cut back the spending. So you stop adding to the debt, you free up cash flow to pay down the existing debt while still doing what you need to do on the savings side.
Great answer. And I want to circle back. You mentioned values. How specifically does one's values make an impact on their financial decisions or their investment decisions?
The one that always comes up for me, because it's really important to me, is just freedom to choose. That just my life, right? Like getting up in the morning and being able to choose how I live my life overall. And a lot of times people will say, well, yeah, I want the freedom to choose, which means that I have to use all my money now. So they have all the options on the table. I can choose to buy a car. I can choose to travel. I can choose to buy a big house, versus saving a bunch of money and not using your money now means I can't do those things. But what they're missing is that you have an entire life to live. And although you're making oftentimes for our clients really good money now, and you can feel flush and what they call glittering rich means high cash flow, but no balance sheet, no savings. You can feel great, but then when you stop working, either because you choose to at retirement or because you're forced to through health reasons, you have no cash flow coming in, but you have not saved anything. So now you can't live powerfully at all. You can't choose anything. So to be able to say, I want to choose powerfully now and live my life free to do what I want now, but also know that in the future, I'm probably going to do that too. That's where the balance comes in. And that's where we can start to divide out your money to say, here's how much you should spend now to spend really strongly on what you value, cutting out everything else that isn't of importance to you and saving that money so that you can spend really strongly on what you value down the road.
Love it. Kaylee, would you like to add to any of that? That was a great answer, Eric.
I think that pretty much covers it. I think it's just those core values when you're making those kinds of decisions, because I think people can still get caught up in, like, you know, they want, like Eric was saying, they want the freedom and the choice now, and they kind of prioritize that over the future. And it's a really hard balance to strike. But I think what can help people reframe is, again, looking at, we always tell people, like, choose, you know, five core values. And that's things like family, community. It can be things like autonomy, freedom. So once they have that set of values, they can look at that and then look at how they're spending their money day to day right now. And if there's anything there that is like, well, that does nothing to do with what you said is most important to you, like, cut that out. That's the candidate to reduce the spending so that you can save, so that you're balancing, you know, today and tomorrow. And, you know, we have to be careful. It is a balance. It's more rare, but people can save too much and not live enough now. I think it's easier to spend now, but there are people who are just, they're saving too much because they're afraid. They're afraid of not having enough money down the road. And so they're missing opportunities now. And again, those values can guide that decision too. Because if you're saying, you know, travel, like that, like experiencing the world is a very important thing to you, but you're not actually using your money to do that. You're just squirreling it away every last penny. That would be something that we would look at and say, like, you need to set aside money to do this now, because someday is not a date on the calendar. Someday is not a real thing, you know?
I love that. Someday. There's a movie that I always think about when I hear that term, which I won't go down that rabbit hole. You brought up a really good point that I want to dive into just a little bit about saving too much. Because money is an energy, right? Like attracts like. So if you're in that scarce mentality, which is what's happening when you're hoarding, is not an appropriate term. That's a little extreme, but, you know, that's what some people do. How do, you know, do you have a better way to explain that of how, by doing that, you know, money wants to be circulated. Money is supposed to be, there's a flow. There's a, you know, the yin and the yang and the give and the take. So for somebody that's doing that, what would be a way for them to still feel safe with their money and yet understand that they, you know, by investing it, they're going to end up having more down the road? Like, do you ever have that with any of your clients where you've got to really help them see it, change their perspective, I guess is really what it boils down to, is your perspective.
Yes. Yeah. We do see that often, and it's a fine place to start, but it has to be broken down to help them understand the impact of it all. And just like anything else. So there is a flow. Yes. There's a flow of things. You can look at it that way. I also look at it from a practicing what you want to do, because if if you're practicing saving so much, you're going to be a terrible spender. It sounds weird, but if you don't practice spending your money on the things that you value, you won't know how to do that, and you'll never do it. If you don't do it now in retirement, you can do the same thing. I don't have enough money still. And you just live your life and you've missed out on all the opportunity. So practicing spending is really important to do. But in order to get people comfortable with that, we can, what we do is use our financial planning software, right? Our software, we put in what you have going on right now, meaning what's on your balance sheet? What do you have in the bank? What do you have in 401ks? What do you have in debt now? What does your income look like? What does your savings look like? How much can you save on an annual basis? And we project that forward on a very conservative basis to say, like, what if you just put all of your money that you save under your mattress and it earns nothing? You're not going to lose it in the stock market if you do that, but you're also going to lose to inflation. So it's probably not a great idea versus investing it and saying you earn 8% returns over time, because that's an aggressive, I think, return. And if you can do that for 30 years and you can see visually what the dollar amount is on your projection at your retirement with the financial planning software we use, then you can start to realize, wow, okay, so it doesn't feel like I'm saving all that much, but if I save it in the right place, it can grow exponentially over time. And that might help people start to ease up on the savings, because we could say, you're going to have so much money, you won't be able to spend it in retirement. What are you going to do with it? And then they might say, well, that's kind of wasteful. So let's work on step-by-step, baby steps, backing off. Don't, you know, if you're saving 40% of your income, maybe you start to save 30% of your income. So we're not saying go from 40 to 10.
Right.
But we can start to ease into it. And over time, this is why we work with people on an ongoing basis and we meet with them often. These conversations evolve over time. And it, even in the beginning, they're like, I'm saving everything. 3 years from now, they might be saying, you know what? I've learned, and now I've seen, and you've shown me that it's okay to start to spend, and I'm seeing it in the planning, and that's really helpful.
Yeah, well, you can't take it with you, that's for sure.
Right.
I mean, you can, but it's just gonna, you know, it's better to spend it now. And the thing is before we wrap up, like, yes, money cannot buy you happiness. However, money can buy you things that change your lifestyle and improve your lifestyle and the values, Kelly, that you brought up. Like, I think that's, you know, if you're having trouble spending money, you know, well, give it to charity, you know, donate it to help other people. Like, that's another way to, excuse me, to really make a difference, you know, with your money. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Is there anything else that you guys want to talk about before we wrap up that I haven't asked you, or and also make sure you throw in where people can find you?
Yeah, sure. I think, Sandy, something you said at the beginning about, like, can money build, like, help you create financial security? I think that was a really interesting question. I don't know if we totally answered, but I think the answer is yes and no, is that on paper, yes, you can have a certain level of assets that should, you know, get you through your life, so be able to afford the lifestyle you want, have you covered for all your needs, most of your wants. And I think the no part of the answer, though, is that it's still internal. Like, a sense of security comes from somewhere within you. And there is no external force on earth, whether it's a person, whether it's money, whether it's a house, that is ultimately going to make you feel secure. Like, that is something that you have to work through. Just like a lot of this other stuff, you have to work through. Yeah. With yourself to figure out what gives you a sense of security from the inside. I don't know if that sounds really cheesy or not, but I think it's just, yeah, like in my personal experience, I've noticed that I went through a lot of years thinking like, well, this thing is going to be, people sub out security or happiness. This thing will make me happier. This thing will make me feel secure. Right. As long as it's external to you, it might for a little bit satisfy that feeling, but then it fades over time because it's not something that is sourced from your own self. So I think that's something to keep in mind just when you're using money as a tool. That's part of it, is you can build really great things and it's not the final answer to anything, no matter how much money you have. And if you don't recognize that, it's a tough journey because you're constantly seeking that external thing that's not going to be there.
Oh, what a beautiful way to say that. And thank you for reiterating that and explaining it a little bit further, because that's what people think. Well, I want to win the lottery, or I want $1 million. Well, do you want the money or do you want the feeling that it's going to get you, which is what you were talking about. And that's what people, there's that misconception there.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Eric?
I started this business in 2013. So I've been in the business for 20 years now, too, before that even. So just the amount of conversations that I've had with people of all income levels, of all wealth levels, is significant. And It's funny what you can learn, because it's similar conversations for everybody. Right? Just because you have a lot of money doesn't mean you're rich. And just because you have a little money doesn't mean you're poor. And it's how you use the money as that tool that really drives things home. And if you can right set your lifestyle to fit under the umbrella of your income, which means spending on things that you value, saving enough money of that income for the future, whether that's 2 years from now to buy a house or it's 30 years from now to retire, it's all achievable. But you can't do it overnight. You don't walk into the gym and bench press 300 pounds on day one. And you're not going to do the same thing with your money. You have to start somewhere. And today is the best day to start. So go out there, educate yourself. If you want an expert, then you should reach out to a qualified financial advisor. We are accepting clients. Our website to find us is beyondyourhammock.com. And there we have blogs and podcasts, information that can be consumed free of charge. There's no access necessary. Right. You can just be on the outside and learn from what we put out there. But you can also find out how to work with us by clicking the Work With Us button on the top right corner just to see what their process looks like. And if you think you're a good fit, we'd be happy to have a conversation with you.
Nice. And they can call you and have a free conversation.
Correct.
At the same time. Right. I love that. Beyond Your Hammock. So folks, check that out. Check out all the resources, because knowledge is power. And if you're listening to this podcast, you're hungry for information. So check out beyondyourhammock.com. And thank you both so much for taking the time. I love having conversations about money. And I know it's something that people want to learn more about and be more comfortable with. So thank you both for what you're doing and for showing up today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us on. It was a great experience.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome. All right, folks. I hope that you and your family are happy and healthy and that your lives are filled with peace, joy, and lots of financial abundance, we'll say. Take care, everyone.